Well, y'all are probably wondering, what are you looking at? You're looking at something that hadn't been seen for years. With the destruction of the temple in 70 AD, the priesthood that was there is basically unseen. Still exist in some form, but they are there. But I kind of just want to go tell you how this all came about. In this statement, it says they serve in a system of worship that is only a copy, a shadow of the real one in heaven. When Moses was getting ready to build the tabernacle, God gave him this warning: be sure that you make everything according to the pattern I have shown you here on the mountain. Now, I have to explain to you, this is something that Chuck and I planned months ago, that I would appear as a temple priest. And the way that this evolved, when we first talked, yes, of course I agreed, here I am standing. But I said, good, you know, I'll find a costume somewhere and we'll be good. Well, the fact of the matter is you couldn't find one. Now, you could find the high priest costumes, like for kids and so forth, but you could not find the regular or the ordinary priest, which this represents. Now, there was a very good and deep lesson in this for me, and it's this very thing. Because when I was putting this together, I realized I've got to do this the right way. So what I did, I managed to find a seamstress in Okeechobee, a very good one at that, and I talked to her, and she says, yes, I can do this. Because I showed her pictures and everything and the measurements, and I was responsible for the material to find for it, which I did at Joanne's. But before this all really got into gear, I called Chuck and I asked him, I said, Chuck, we need to pray. We need to pray that God will inspire this seamstress and that she will do everything the way that you want it done, as well as my out there going to get the materials and so forth. Well, here it is. Believe me, this is not a costume at all. This was fitted to me. I have to tell you, with this, I was kind of fearful in many ways, because this is something that represents God. Be sure that it can't be haphazard, it can't be right, especially when it comes to a priest's garment. It has to be the way that he specifies. Now, fortunately, several months ago, I do have a book from the Temple Institute that's located in Jerusalem. It's the Holy Temple in Jerusalem, and the author is Rabbi Ariel. That's a very detailed and exhausted history of the temple. That's where I went. That's where I found the pattern. Because the priesthood, of course, you have to realize, you know, back in the day, they didn't have glasses. If I don't wear mine, you can't see, nor did we have microphones. But I'll wear my glasses so I can see. But I want to continue in this. Be sure you make everything according to the pattern I have shown you here on the mountain. And then here's statement number two. Blessed and holy are those who share in the first resurrection. For them the second death holds no power. But they will be priests of God and of Christ, and will reign with him 1,000 years. The priesthood continues. It did not end in 70 AD. Because we do know and understand that there is going to be a third temple, and there is going to be a physical priesthood as well as a spiritual priesthood. What you see standing here one day, you will see again. Because when it comes time to these end times, and when the Temple Mount, because when you look at the second temple when it was built, what was the thing they did first? the altar. They had the altar in place and built the temple later. So when you start looking at, okay, these end times, this millennial temple, all they need is an altar up there. But the temple has a beginning. The sacred tent in Exodus 21 says, "Moreover, you shall make the tabernacle with 10 curtains of fine twined linen and blue and purple and scarlet with cherubims. The work of the skillful workmen you shall make them. You shall make a screen of the door of the tent of blue, purple, and scarlet, and fine twined linen to work the embroidery." This was the first, right here. Now, the thing to keep in mind is Moses got the instructions from God on how to do this. And God says in there that he filled the craftsmen with his spirit so they could craft this temple. And they proceeded. Now, one of the things that's part of the temple plan, God also gave Moses the plan on how to build the temple. This was passed down to Joshua and in generation to generation until it finally ended up in David's hands. And he, King David, and the prophet Samuel were the ones that started putting together the planning, the materials for the first temple. So there is something that God has been doing here. And when you look into the description in the book of Ezekiel, the temple is going to be in a pattern, but will continue. Now, something had to take place here. Okay, we've got the sacred tent, and Moses and Aaron are the spokesmen for God, correct? But there's not a priesthood, is there? Now we come to the creation of the priesthood, where it reads, "Now take Aaron your brother and his sons with him from among the children of Israel, that he may minister to me as priest. Aaron and Aaron's son," I'm not so good on my pronunciations, "Nadab, Abihu, Eleazar, and Ithamar." I could be incorrect on that. Something I'm still working on. I think most of us are. But a priest should know, though, isn't that right? And then we come to the priestly garments. It says, "You shall make holy garments for Aaron your brother for glory and for beauty." When I was reading this, putting this together, this is what I was talking about, how I finally arrived at this. Not a cheap costume. This is something that represents God. It represents him and his glory. And that was something I took very seriously. I mean, I had some anxiety about it. I said, I'm putting on priestly garments that represent God. I don't even know if I'm qualified or if I should be out there in my backyard doing peace offerings, because it was that serious to me, and it still is because of what it is and what it represents. It says, "So you shall speak to all who are gifted artisans, whom I have filled with the spirit of wisdom, that they may make Aaron's garments to consecrate him, that he may minister to me as priest." I did the same thing, making an appeal to Chuck, "Please, let's let the both of us pray that God will gift the hands of this seamstress, that he will inspire her to do exactly what you want this to be." The same pattern that is here is also being done here, that's in front of you. And it was taken seriously, believe me, it was. It says, "For Aaron's sons shall make tunics and shall make sashes for them, and you shall make hats for them for glory and beauty." "For instance, shall make tunics and shall make sashes for them." You got to be careful with this thing. "So you shall put them on Aaron your brother and on his sons with him. You shall anoint them, consecrate them, and sanctify them, that they may minister to me as priest. Here's the beginning of your priesthood. Now it's all coming together. Now, I want to go through this because the tunic was woven of plaid squares, and the sleeves were woven separately and sewn into the tunic. The gown reaches down to the feet, slightly above the heels, while the sleeves reach the palm of the priest. That's what was done. This part is the tunic. Follow the instructions to the T. And I thank God was working with that seamstress so she would get it right. The pants are worn around the waist, close to the heart, reaching down to the knees. The priest ties them on under the tunic with ribbons. I'm not going to show you that. I think that would be too much information. But I do have the proper, not particularly this, but I do have the proper foundation on that is okay with this. Okay? And we'll just leave it at that. Says the hat is actually a turban, some 8 meters of material in length. Now, a meter is 3.28 feet, so you can figure. But down here, this shows here the hat worn by the regular priest. So there were two different kinds of priests. There was the ordinary, and then there was the regular priest, in accordance with the view of several, you know, and so forth as it reads. The very specific thing is this little button that you have right here. And when you read the Hebrew word, it adds a splendor to the hat. It has meaning. But of course, you would have to be an Orthodox to really dig deep into that, but it is done. Here it is. I can't imagine wrapping 26 feet of something around my head. The sash is 3 fingers wide and 16 meters long, which comes to what, about 52 feet? That's a lot. And that is adorned with a border in blue, purple, and red colored woolen threads upon a length of flat. Now, I could not find that pattern, but the dominant color in the sash is red, it's scarlet. And when you look at a lot of renderings, you'll see the red sash. But what was interesting about the blue and the purple that was in the sash, depending on the time of day and the light, there are times the sash looked purple. There were times it looked blue. And then there were times in the bright light, blood red. So there were specific things to be followed. I'm not that far off, but this is it. You're looking at it. Now, priestly responsibilities. It starts, the Lord said to Aaron, you, Aaron, your sons and your relatives from the tribe of Levi will be held responsible for any offenses related to the sanctuary. But you and your sons alone will be held responsible for violations connected with the priesthood. But let me back up a moment with the original and the regular priest. Okay, your original priests were the younger men. They're stronger. They dealt with the sacrifices, wrestling bulls and things of that nature. Your regular priests were in the inner court and the hall entry to the Holy of Holies. That was their responsibility to take care of. So they took care of the altar, and they took care of the hallway, the entrance hallway, in front of the Holy of Holies, where you had the menorah, and you had the showbread tables. You had the golden altar for incense. That was their responsibility. They were in that inner part, where the ordinary priests, you saw them everywhere. They were in the courtyards, they were dealing with all the duties, and the duties in the temple are numerous. Because each priest is trained to do specific things. And the way that it worked, they actually had shifts, depending on how many priests there were, and they would serve a full week. In the Second Temple period, the shifts was every 24. 24 weeks. You serve 24 weeks, you serve again. But it depends on the number. Your regular priests were around all the time. So there's so much to it. But if you were back in the day of Christ's time in the Second Temple, you go into the Temple Mount, this is what you're going to see. You're going to see him very busy, and you're going to see him everywhere. Now, the one thing, if you were in the temple, the two courtyards and the temple, you were barefooted. Now, you may ask why. It's because it's holy ground. Such as when God said to Moses, remove your sandals for you stand on holy ground. So if you're in that inner temple area, you're barefooted for the entire thing while you're there. And you slept there as well. It says, but you and your sons, the priest, must personally handle all the priestly rituals associated with what? The altar. Your regular priest, your higher level priest. And with everything behind the inner curtain, the Holy of Holies. Only one person who could go in there, which was the high priest. But there were times that repairs had to be done in the Holy of Holies. You know how they did that? Up above, they had a couple of trapdoors. They would put this individual in a box, a three-sided box, and lower him if there was any tiles to be prepared, and it was to prevent him from viewing the Ark of the Covenant. So there were things, and your regular priests, this is what they did. This was their responsibility. And giving you the priest, and then he says, and giving you the priesthood as your special privilege of service, any unauthorized person who comes near the sanctuary will be put to death. Now, I've got a slide on this. You got to kind of picture the Temple Mount, which you have. Then you've got the temple part itself. There is a small wall, a low wall, that goes around it. Now, if you're unclean or have some sort of issue and you come through that lower wall, you could possibly die. That's when, an unauthorized person cannot come into a certain area. And that also applied to priests. If a priest had a particular problem and he hadn't repented of it and he comes through that lower wall, he may die. I mean, there's so many things when it comes to the temple. It says, bring your relatives to your relatives of the tribe of your ancestor tribe to assist you and your sons as you perform the sacred duties in front of the tabernacle of the covenant. So, it was the tribe of Levi. That's your priestly tribe. Some of us already understand that when the land was divided, no land was given to the tribe of Levi. They belonged to the temple. That was theirs. And we'll get into some interesting things later. Now, four divisions of responsibility. When you look at these responsibilities, it was King David that set it forth, which would be the First Temple. You had these divisions of responsibility amongst the priesthood. The first one being your temple duties, high and regular priests. They took care of the temple, your sacrifices and all that was involved in that. Now, you also had a judicial branch, the Sanhedrin. What's interesting about the Sanhedrin, did you know that there's three divisions within the Sanhedrin? There's two lower courts that it consists of 23 members. What we would consider the Supreme Court was the Supreme Sanhedrin, which had the 71. I didn't realize there was a division here in the Sanhedrin, and as I did a little research on it, you can kind of compare it to our legal system. You have a lower court, you have an appeals court, and then you finally end up with the Supreme Court. Very much in pattern, and I found that to be quite interesting. And then the educational branch, which taught the Torah, which taught the law. That was their response. And of course, you had the Pharisees and the scribes that were very much involved with that and within the teachings. Temple security, the gatekeepers. We knew that there were security because they were with the priests when they went and got Christ. But what do? Okay, at night, they guard the temple gates. That was their duty. And some of the priests were also assigned to some of these duties. Now, if you were caught asleep, you're in trouble. And you know, of course, that happened. But they guarded these gates at night. And then when the dawn came, that's when they opened the gates and the daily activity begins. But the activity in the temple never stops. You have, like, we can say, like a day shift, and you have a night shift. Because the night shift is doing things to get prepared for all the activities that take place during the day. That's what I'm saying. There's so much here that goes on in this temple that it's amazing to study. And if you ever wanted to study, I'd recommend that you get that book from the Temple Institute. It's a $60 book, but it's well worth it because you will learn quite a bit from it. Priestly compensation.
Yes.
We get paid. It's not, that's God. He pays you for what you do, for your work. It says, the Lord gave these further instructions to Aaron. I myself have put you in charge of all the holy offerings that are brought to me by the people of Israel. I have given all these consecrated offerings to you and your sons, your permanent share. This is just the beginning. It says, as for the tribe of Levi, your relatives, I will compensate them for their service in the tabernacle. Instead of allotment of land, I will give them the tithes from the entire land of Israel. I don't think you can sit there and say to yourself, they weren't poor. But that was the compensation. But there's other factors that come involved in a little later. It says, you are allotted the portion of the most holy offerings that is not burned on the fire. This portion of all the most holy offerings, including the grain offerings, sin offerings, guilt offerings, will be most holy, and it belongs to you and your sons. See, we get a little round. I mean, we're well fed. There's no question about it. And there we do well, like they all do. Now, there was a tithing requirement for the priesthood. It says, give these instructions to the Levites. When you receive from the people of Israel the tithes I have assigned in your allotment, give a tenth of the tithes you receive, a tithe of the tithe, to the Lord as a sacred offering. We're required to tithe, just like everybody else. What we receive through all the offerings and all that, you know, that comes in, there's a tenth that we have to give to Aaron or the high priest. And it's required. There's no getting away from that. It says, you must present one-tenth of the tithe received from the Israelites as a sacred offering to the Lord. This is the Lord's sacred portion, and you must present it to Aaron the priest. And then it says, be sure to give to the Lord the best portions of the gifts given to you. Now, does that apply to us today? When we tithe to God, should it not meet this very thing? Should it not be the first? You have that opportunity tomorrow with Pentecost. But there's a whole sermon that's involved in tithing. Those of us who have been around for understand that it has to be a willing, loving giving. But we have to make sure that it's the first, that it's the most honorable part. But that's left up to you, the individual. I mean, you can go all the way back to the example of Cain and Abel, where Abel's was accepted and Cain's wasn't, because there was a problem with his offering. Can we have that same problem today? My answer would be to you, yes. It's what's in your heart. It's your motive. And you'll have that opportunity tomorrow. Now, here's a question. Is there a future third temple and priesthood? The answer to this is yes. And these are your references to it. And you will find in chapter 44, 15, 31, there are rules for the priesthood. Those two divisions are still there. There's some priests that are responsible for the altar and the sacrifice that goes on in that inner court. The other priests, which would be your ordinary priests, handle everything else regarding the temple. The temple is it's a fact of reality. It is going to happen. When it happens, we really can't say. We don't know if it's in our lifetime or someone else's. But if you remember with Hezekiah, when they rebuilt the temple, the very first thing, I'm going to say this again, is they put the altar in place and started the sacrifices. And I think it was 18 years later they finally got started again in building the temple. This is a pattern. And it's probably a pattern that's going to hold true to when we get to the end of this age. You will see that altar there. The sacrifices will begin. And you will see this. It will be before your eyes. Now, when you go into, there's a chapter in this where it talks about the rebuilding of that third temple. And there's a plan. They actually have a plan and they show some of it. It's built in the same pattern. But one of the things I want to mention is that when it came to Herod, Herod expanded the temple. I mean, he really dressed it up. But he did it in the proportions that God prescribed. Nothing was wrong. Yes, it was expanded, and there were some fewer details. Because in the first temple, there was a wall and a door opening with the curtains to go into the Holy of Holies. Not so in the second temple. In the second temple, there was no masonry. It was curtains. Two curtains with a space in between. And where the Ark of the Covenant was, the rods, the poles, you knew exactly where it was because it protruded. And that was high priest and things like that. There were other ones, like in King Solomon's, the first temple, there were 11 menorahs and 11 showbread tables. In the second temple, only one menorah, only one show table. So there's adjustments that are being made, but they're in accordance, they're in agreement with God's, the way that God wants it done. So variations, such as the red sash. If you don't have the pattern, you can't reproduce it, but they were predominantly scarlet. And you know, I'm talking off the record now because I was talking to Chuck about this. I said, when Christ returns and you have this physical priesthood, if those sashes are scarlet, does that possibly represent the blood of Jesus Christ? It could. That was just something off the record that we were just talking about. Now this is where I kind of want to stop here, but I got a few more things. Because when the priest returns, he's going to go more into the third temple and the priesthood and the responsibilities. But as you see right here, you see a high priest and you see a regular priest. This is what the book is stating, that with the third temple, or the beginnings of it, this is how they will look. And if you notice, there's a difference in that sash. It's a white belt with an embroidery in it. Not down like here, like it was in the first and second. It's right here. So basically, in closing, I just kind of want to go through that they serve in a system of worship that is only a copy, a shadow of the real ones in heaven. We know this. We understand that physically what we see is also represented in heaven. So there is a priesthood, because it's being represented. But it's in when Christ returns, it's the two that you have. You have the physical priesthood, but you also got a spiritual priesthood, which is, if you're looking, well, we'll get there. This is the very first one that we saw from the beginning, right here. This is the sacred tent that was built, and that's Mount Sinai there. And of course, you see your priest in their gods. There's the altar. And then we progress to Shiloh. Now, that sacred tent is within those stone walls. Because Shiloh was a transition from the desert tent to the first temple. And Shiloh was there for 369 years. Now, what I find interesting in this rendering is that the lady in the purple here is supposedly Hannah. And Eli is right here, the high priest. So if you know the story in Samuel about Hannah and everything, what happened, Shiloh, the temple, was eventually destroyed. And Eli met his end as well. And so did his family line, as you understand what his sons did. So then we progress to the first temple. It was in place for 410 years before it was destroyed. This was Solomon's temple. This was the one that he built. And it was a beautiful, and he made changes in details, but they were within the guidelines of what God handed down in the plan that he gave to Moses, that went to Joshua, that went down through generations, and finally to the hands of David and Samuel. This is the second temple. It was there for 420 years. But what I wanted to show you, the Sanhedrin. At the end, that's a courtroom. That's the lower court of the Sanhedrin. Here's another lower court. This one here was the Supreme Sanhedrin. That's where they were. But as you can see, this is that wall I was talking about, this lower wall, that you better be the right person and in good standing, or it'll be the last time for you. It was a very elaborate, beautiful temple. But see, what Herod did, he expanded, and he built this colonnade here. That was added. And that was a colonnade with pilgrims when they were coming into the temple. That is the building that they would go into, and that was also the colonnade. And you read in the Gospels where Christ was teaching in the colonnade. It's right here. This is what the future Third Temple may look like. But of course, it will be modernized. They won't be burning oil or things like that. They assume, it would have electricity and things of this nature. And the renderings that I've seen are quite impressive. But this third temple will take place. And it will be when Christ returns. And if you go in the book of Ezekiel, you can read about it, the dimensions and everything like this. But I just wanted you to get a picture in your mind. It's coming back. And so is the priesthood, what you see today. It's coming back. No, Bill. Okay, I want to end right here because I'm working basically on the second part, which is the third temple and the priesthood and what those responsibilities are. But also, I want to go into Revelation, where it talks about, like in the first resurrection, the white robes. That's in chapter 6 and 7, you'll see about these white robes. White stands for righteousness. You will see these robes. You will probably have one. But it'll be an interesting thing, and so when the priest returns, he will talk about that.